In speaking with Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies, her most recent book is Understanding ISIS and the New Global War on Terror. Phyllis Bennis, thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on FAIR's website. It's fair.org. The website is also the place to sign up for FAIR's email list. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
It is 6 o'clock, and you are tuned in to KBOO Portland 90.7. Coming up next, we have Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement in Portland. The walk ends at King Elementary School with a celebration to show solidarity and celebrate survivors of domestic violence. Again, that's the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement, 3920 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the opening of Mommy, an exhibit at Yale Union, Saturday, October 10th at 4 p.m. Mommy is a group exhibition featuring work by Lutz Bacher, Sonia Hamilton, Diane Simpson, and more, including a performance by Corinne Schneider. The show opens October 10th at 4 p.m. and will be up through December 20th. Again, that's Mommy at the Yale Union, 800 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This Saturday on Swingin' Country, we will take a trip to the country with Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler's had a busy career, starting out with the hugely successful rock band Dire Straits. He has branched out to producing other artists, composing film scores, and playing guitar for the likes of Bob Dylan, George Jones, and Randy Newman. Mark also recorded duet albums with Chet Atkins and Emmylou Harris. Also, Jonathan Trawick from the swing band Well Swung will be in studio to play live. So tune in to KBOO Saturday morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. as we take a trip to the country with Mark Knopfler and Jonathan Trawick.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity, globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun discussing topics that we are passionate about. If you would like to follow our story, you can like our page on Facebook by getting updates and viewing behind-the-scenes photos. We are also on the web at www.kabu.fm/breadandroses. If you are interested in joining the collective, everyone is welcome. To host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KABU's volunteer manager at volunteer@kabu.org. My name is Jordan Michelle. And tonight on Bread and Roses, we are going to have a conversation on equity and the importance of having representation of different cultural groups on school campuses. We will also discuss the barriers that may affect some students of color. How does mental health, poverty, and other home-related factors impact attendance, student behavior at school, and academic gaps? Black students in particular happen to have the highest disciplinary rates in public schools. What are other alternatives to disciplinary action than school suspension? In order to move forward, it is imperative that we implement interventions such as tutoring, enrichment activities, mentoring, parent involvement, and college readiness that can change the narrative of the students in a school community. Before we dive into this discussion, I would like to first introduce our guest for the evening. His name is Deshaun Williams, and he is a licensed clinical social worker that worked as a mental health consultant with a large agency in Portland, and works as a private practitioner with RAP Counseling and Consulting as the owner and provider. In addition, he serves as an adjunct professor in the Graduate School of Social Work. Deshaun, who was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, has also worked in the field of clinical work, social work, for the last 9 years with a specific focus and passion for serving youth and their families. Deshaun recognizes the need to offer keen clinical insight in treating symptoms related to depression, anxiety, trauma, other mood disorders, adjustment disorders, and negative behavioral presentation. He has provided an array of support services in several settings, such as Children's Behavioral Health in Salem, residential services in Gladstone and Multnomah County, mental health and addiction services in the greater metro area within Portland, where he has worked for the past 4 years. Deshaun is very passionate about working with youth of color and their families, and has had an empathetic understanding for the various barriers and challenges youth of color and their families face with addressing concerns of mental illness and stress. He provides cultural responsive and specific services, which allows him to work with families through a lens that is both honoring and respecting as they seek assistance in a system of a dominant culture. Deshaun strives to see individuals and families brought into alignment who are healthy, happy, and functioning as their greatest capacity. Welcome, Deshaun, after all that big mouthful.
Thank you, Ms. Jordan.
You're welcome. Welcome, welcome. We want to start the conversation off by just asking you, what are your experiences while working in Oregon's school system, and what would you like to see implemented?
Sure. Once again, thank you for allowing me to be here. I'm so glad to be on this show and to share some of my insights and mm-hmm. my experiences with working in the Oregon school systems. You know, I've been a part of the Oregon school systems for a long time, in particular in Portland. You know, I'm born and raised here, mm-hmm. Portland, Oregonian. Went through all of the Portland public school systems. So I've had my experience as both being in the school and also being an adult now working inside of the school. So I kind of have both lenses.
Of course.
So a lot of my work actually began prior to me completing my graduate level degree. You know, I was working with another program who was very instrumental in helping me get through my high school years, but also through my college years, which is REAP, Reaching and Empowering All People. It's a fantastic program. But so after I graduated from with my undergraduate in criminal justice, I started to do some volunteer work with them. And so that kind of got my foot back in the door with the school systems. And so I would go in and participate in their mentoring section of their program, and just another opportunity for me to give back. So that started many, many years ago. So I'm still doing some work with them. But now that I have an opportunity as a graduate from PSU with my MSW and now licensed to provide mental health services, I'm hired through Multnomah County Health Department to work in the schools as a school-based health therapist. Mm-hmm. And so now I get a chance to see what it's like for students to come to school, but not just come to school, but they are experiencing some other other barriers or other things that may be impacting their education level. So I really enjoy working in the school systems. I think it's very important for me to be back at even the high school that I went to, which is Jefferson. So I am working there with the school-based health programs. And one of the things that, to your second question, is in terms of what I like to see implemented, you know, that's a fairly big question. And but I think just on the really basic level and ground level, I think it's important for especially students of color to see representation of their own culture. I think that's very important. I think it's very empowering, especially when you're talking about a people who come from an experience where they don't really get a chance to see people who represent them in levels of education, in levels of other academic areas, you know, in ownership, entrepreneurship. You know, it really empowers them to have a voice that they can also strive and make it. And I think that's one of the important things. You know, I have my own struggle. And I think I can talk about that now.
Yeah.
So I've had my own struggles with identity and purpose and, you know, being an African-American male and being in the classroom. My fifth grade teacher, Miss Johnson, she actually really, really she changed my life, actually. You know, I had some really, really tough experience being of the darker complexion and what it means to be black, what it means to be light skinned. That's a whole nother topic, kind of radio program.
Right.
But, you know, she really changed my life by really instilling in me that it's okay to be dark skinned. It's okay to be black. It's okay to love yourself for who you are, because I had really, really strong feelings about that. Really bad attitude problems when it comes to that. And so she really, really instilled in me that it's okay. And so anyway, long answer to your question, but I think there needs to be some level of representation of the cultures that are being served at that school. It should match, you know, the school personnel, the school staff, the teachers should match the population in which they're serving. And I think that would be super impactful for the students that are under the teacher's instruction.
Right. So that kind of transitions to what my next question would be. So you find it very important for that representation to be there. And why is that? And what kind of barriers do students face when they don't have that representation on campus?
Well, I think, so, you know, I can speak from, as a therapist, working, and we're talking about the Pacific Northwest, so this may not be applicable to other parts where there's a heavy representation of African Americans or people of color on the East Coast per se or down south, but we're talking about the Pacific Northwest where you know the African American population in Portland is what I believe 2%, somewhere around there, 2 or 3%. So, you know, we don't really have a large amount of representation just within the state. Mm-hmm. And so then when you dwindle that down to a city, mm-hmm. and then when it dwindles down into the schools.
Right.
So I think when parents, I mean, excuse me, when the barriers that I think are in place, mm-hmm. Is that a student who does not see that representation, there's an immediate connection that happens when oftentimes, I shouldn't say always, but oftentimes there's a connection that's made when I see someone that looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
It mm-hmm. really breaks down the barriers. When I see someone who looks like me, not only just looks like me, but also is in a position of power, because mm-hmm. teachers hold a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in seeing that brings a level of understanding, a greater sense of identity,
mm-hmm.
Which is super important. Self-esteem is mm-hmm. is very important, especially when you're dealing with emotional beings,
mm-hmm.
Students who are really in the place where they're trying to find themselves, mm-hmm. and learning how to solidify who they are. And this is a very impressionable time for young people and students. And so I think those barriers play a large role in the success of students and mm-hmm. their education. And so I think students need to see people that look like them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in itself can be a barrier. When someone feels like immediately when there's like not that understanding, you know, there is, and oftentimes there are assumptions that are being made that because you don't look like me, you can't really understand me.
Right.
And I think a lot of students, you know, initially they can tend to go that direction. But I think that is a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
When students don't feel like the teachers understand where they're coming from, who they are, what life is like, what it took for them to even get to school.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
There's a lot of things that go into place that, you know, a lot of students that come to school that are disadvantaged,
mm-hmm.
Or are coming from poverty,
mm-hmm.
There are some serious barriers. There are, you know, oftentimes I hear stories and these kids are like fighting
mm-hmm.
to get to school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just amazing. So I look at them as being super resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And when I always see them, it's so good to see you. I'm not looking at their deficits.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you late?
Mm-hmm.
Or why are you looking this way? Or
there we go.
Why didn't you take care of yourself this morning? I don't
mm-hmm.
do those questioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good to see you. I'm so glad you came. So those kinds of things get in the way.
And I'm glad you mentioned those key words and that encouragement when you see your students, because I think that when it comes to white staff, white teachers, you know, most of them do care, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's really, you know, you kind of just gave them advice. How do you approach students who have this mindset already that, oh, you don't know how I feel. You don't know what I'm going through. I can't talk to you about what I'm going through because we're on two different levels. You're white middle class
mm-hmm.
and I'm from where I'm from,
right.
you know. So what advice would you give to white staff who want to make that connection with black youth or just all students of color who might be coming out of poverty
yeah.
or living in poverty?
Yeah. I think the state is really trying, the state of Oregon is really trying to move toward this really trauma-informed care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're hearing that often. We're hearing that a lot within our school systems and just across the board. And I think when teachers approach students or approach certain situations dealing with students, I think the mindset should be, you know, and this is a principle of trauma-informed care, is, you know, what's happened as opposed with what's wrong with you, what's happened to you, as opposed to saying, you know, something's wrong with you. You did something wrong. You're acting out because something's wrong with you, or you have an attitude because something's wrong with you, as opposed to what's happened to you. What the teacher doesn't know is before the student got to school, that her or him and the parent got into a huge argument before they came to school. And so when they come to school, they're carrying that same thing into the classroom or when they're interacting with the student or with the teacher. And so if a teacher catches a student at a certain moment, they are looked at as, they're saying, you know, you've done something wrong, or it's insubordination, or, so those things happen, as opposed to what happened.
Right.
You know, just taking the moment, the time, what happened.
Right.
And that will bring down a lot of the walls. It'll bring down a lot of the barriers. The student the first time may say, oh, get out of my face, I don't want to talk to you. Leave it be. You know, just let it go. It's nothing personal. It's not against you. It's more about where they're at in the moment.
Right.
And I bet you, if you keep doing that, what's happened, or tell me about what's going on with you, that's showing that you care.
Exactly. Building that relationship.
Yes. Relationship is key.
All right. We're going to go into our first music break, and we will return with Deshaun on Bread and Roses.
Listen as your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counting. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool. You gotta be calm. You gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Said, reading the books your father read, trying to solve the puzzles in your own sweet time. Some may have more cash than you, others take a different view. My, oh my, yeah. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. Together. All I know, love will save the day. Time asks no questions, it goes on without you. Leaving you behind if you can stand the pace. The world keeps on spinning, can't stop it if you try to. The best part is danger staring you in the face. As your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds. Trying to keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. My, oh my, hey. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. Together. All I know, love will save the day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together.
To be
You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO from 6 to 7. My name is Jordan Michelle, and my guest tonight is Deshaun Williams, and we are talking about equity in our school systems. So before our break, we were discussing bridging the gap between staff and students of color, and we just wanted to finish out and close up and just say that for any teachers looking to find or answers to why their black students or any student of color is acting out in class, it's really important to develop a relationship to get them more engaged and for them to really understand or get them to understand that you do care about them, you know? And I think that's a major point that Deshaun and I both agree on, just based on our personal experiences and for the students that we work with. So going into our next question, Deshaun, what are the differences between equity and equality? You know, equity is a really big word that's buzzing around the school district. And we are trying to get a better understanding of what that is and why it's different from equality. So
So that's another really good question. And yeah, once again, that's something that is going around, I think, across the state and maybe even across the nation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the difference between, you know, equity and equality is equity is the idea of there's fairness, okay? Mm-hmm. The quality of things being fair. And then equality refers to the sameness, like everybody being treated the same mm-hmm. across the board. Mm-hmm. And so those are the major differences between equity and quality. And sometimes they get used interchangeably, and they're two different words, and they mean two different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in our school system, why is it important that we treat all our students with equity? You know, why is equity more important than equality when it comes to our students of color?
Okay, so yeah, I would actually say that equity is better than equality, but more so that I think the idea is that, okay, we're all here at this, going to school, all the students are coming to school, mm-hmm. all of the students are being taught by the teacher, mm-hmm. right? So that would be the equal part, right? Everyone's mm-hmm. being treated the same in terms of just the education mm-hmm. and instruction, right? But equality would suggest that fairness is not necessarily the same within the school systems. Mm-hmm. And equity is important mm-hmm. because not every student starts off the same.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see
right.
what I'm saying?
Yes.
So you know, a student that's coming from, you know, a school that has all the resources in there, mm-hmm. has all programming in there, aren't mm-hmm. lacking for funding, mm-hmm. aren't lacking for instruction, mm-hmm. have all the teachers, have subjects, you know, that student would be at a higher advantage than a student that's coming from a school that's impoverished, that
right.
don't have those resources. So when you try to compare the two, that's not equity. That's not equitable.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're trying to reach toward the same goal,
mm-hmm.
that's not equitable.
Mm-hmm.
And so school systems have to reevaluate what is equitable, excuse me, with the student populations that they are serving, and tailoring school services to meet the need for those students so that their level of so it'll be equitable across mm-hmm. all students.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I actually recently went to a training where they said that poverty is the key factor to why all students aren't on the same academic level.
Mm-hmm.
If we took out poverty, Black students, Latino students, Native American students, they would be up there with their mm-hmm. white classmates,
mm-hmm.
you know? But because poverty comes into play, and because of whatever mental health issues or whatever the case is going on at home,
mm-hmm.
That is what's causing that fluctuation and, mm-hmm. and difference within the different racial groups.
I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. I totally agree that poverty is the driving force in a lot of ways for this argument of equity in the school systems. We have to address poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be addressed because poverty crosses all domains of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And if a person doesn't have the opportunities because of poverty, they're going to be at a disadvantage, not just academically, but disadvantaged in their physical health, in their emotional health, and in their mental health. It affects all parts of the human being.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting from your example of how you said that, you know, not everyone starts on the same level. Yes, all students go to kindergarten and go up through the scale grade. But also, a lot of their knowledge might be lacking from home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So parents, especially in communities of color, they probably don't even have a college education. You
right.
know, I know for myself, in my line of the family, I'm the first college graduate mm-hmm. in my family. So, you know, for me, I had to do a lot of research and figure out how to get to school, what college was all about. I did take it seriously. It was definitely encouraged in my household, but let's say a white family who's had generations and generations of family who's graduated from college, they're set, they're ready, they might even have connects on how to get into the school,
right.
you know, all those kind of factors. So did you want to kind of go off of how that is very crucial in identifying the gap between race, poverty, and in academic success?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, when you, I think we're getting better. I think, you know, education is being made available to all races of people. I think that mm-hmm. that's becoming, there's improvements in that. But you're also dealing with the fact that we're still, and we're talking about people that are impoverished, but also mm-hmm. people, people of color are at a disadvantaged a place just given our history in the world and our history in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to emphasize college and college readiness for our students.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a very similar background to you, mm-hmm. Jordan, as in, you know, I am the first of 10
wow.
to graduate from a university and the first to go on to get my master's degree. You know, and I say that because it, you know, it was difficult. It was
mm-hmm.
hard. And, you know, in terms of just having the support, you know, I worked all through 4 years of college, all through, well, 7 years of college because
mm-hmm.
I went to graduate school. But I worked, you know, I moved out when I was 18,
mm-hmm.
You know, I did all those things. Not absent of my parents in terms of their support. They
mm-hmm.
supported me, but the level of understanding, the level of connecting, the level
mm-hmm.
of, you know, really emphasizing the importance of college and just understanding,
mm-hmm.
right? Understanding what college is, understanding what the barriers are in college, what the successes are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have a whole lot of that. You know, my parents, like I said before, they're very supportive. They love me. You know, my mom and dad both helped me, you know, pay for things that I needed for college. But it's still that matter of, you know, really understanding that what college is about. And so when you don't have that, those generations
mm-hmm.
of people that
mm-hmm.
have gone through and went
mm-hmm.
to college, it, you know, I think statistically they say that if your parents went to college, most likely you will go to college,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I'm glad that I beat that statistics,
right,
that
right.
we beat the statistics, right?
right?
but that just shows you that it's important for young people to see their caretakers or their caregivers or their parents or someone that's influential in their life, one consistent person to help them and to understand the importance of college, and that will help them get through.
Mm-hmm.
So the connection between all of that is, you know, when you're impoverished, it's going to be very, very difficult for you,
yes,
to think about things that are ahead. It's going to,
yes,
be difficult for you to think about college. It's going to be difficult for you to think about how you're going to, mm-hmm, what you're going to be in life when you're trying to just make it day to day.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's why we should have representatives in our grade school so that they can see that face and encourage them throughout their grade school experience.
Yes.
These are the tools you need. This is how you get here. This is how you get there. Because, you know, counselors on campus, you know, they have 4,000 people on their caseloads, you know,
right,
and teachers, they have a bunch of students. So yes, they can speak to every individual student, but that's going to take a lot, you know? So having those after school programs, having those outlets from, you know, representatives who come from your culture, you first have that connection and then they guide you to where you need to get. And like you said, with, mm-hmm, with REAP, you know, they,
yes,
got you to where you are today,
yes,
and played a major factor. So
yes,
it is so encouraged that parents encourage their students to be involved,
right,
in school,
right,
and find those kind of organizations that fit their passion,
right,
fit their background, whatever it is,
right,
that they're comfortable with, so that they can find those resources if,
mm-hmm,
they can't find it at home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's you know, college is all about navigation.
For sure.
You know, it's all, mm-hmm, about how to learn how to navigate through the college system and the college world.
Mm-hmm.
And so with programs that are in place, they help you to learn how to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
They help you get that early exposure to college, early exposure to what it's like to be on a college campus. I think the earlier we can start getting students exposed to that, the more they have to look forward to as they're going through their school years, early school years, and the more they will want to push to be in college.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I definitely wanted to go into what you specialize in, which is mental health and,
yeah,
consulting youth,
mm-hmm,
who may be enduring any of that. How would a teacher identify mental health in a classroom, you know, from a student of color?
I think there's a lot of ways in which you can identify mental health, and just as a resource for any of the teachers or just any person out there that's interested in identifying mental health. There's a training program out called Youth Mental Health First Aid, which I'm a trainer for. So Youth Mental Health First Aid, and those trainings are all actually being offered through the Tri-County area. So Clackamas, Washington County, and Multnomah County all are in partnership with offering these trainings currently for free. And so I think if you go on any one of those websites, Multnomah County website, Clackamas County website, Washington County website, you can access the training website for Youth Mental Health First Aid. And what Youth Mental Health First Aid does is it teaches gatekeepers signs and symptoms to look for in young people who may be at risk for developing a mental health mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I highly encourage that, because the short time that we have now is not enough to really get down into what youth mental health will look like,
mm-hmm,
in a student. But just the nuts and bolts is, you know, if you're noticing a student is withdrawing from class instruction, and they typically are involved, you know, if you are noticing, if you're noticing a student is not doing very well academically,
mm-hmm,
when they typically are doing well academically,
mm-hmm,
if you notice that a student is sad or showing signs of depression, which is, you know, if they're sad more days than not, if they are becoming more isolated, if you're hearing them talk about, well, the obvious sign, you know, if they're talking about not wanting to live anymore, or they have this sense of hopelessness or helplessness,
mm-hmm,
those are the kind of things you want to look out for. If there's increased irritability,
mm-hmm,
and it's excessive irritability, and not just your typical adolescent kind of irritability where they come in and you say, how you doing? And then they have an attitude, but then later on they're fine. Mm-hmm. But more so like if it's this ongoing, if they're annoyed or irritable all the time, those are the signs that you want to look for. You know, there's a lot of different ways in which the training really goes into. I'm mm-hmm. just tapping on a few things. But behavioral changes, you want to keep an eye out for any of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, if a student is just, you know, if they're showing signs, if they're, you know, staring off into another world, if, mm-hmm. you know, you, if they're not even paying attention, their focus is off, their mm-hmm. concentration is off. Mm-hmm. You want to look for those things as well. I can keep going on and on and on, but anyway, just to name a few, the Youth Mental Health First Aid Training is a great training. It's a 1-day, 8-hour training that's mm-hmm. free to the public now. And I'm saying now because, you know, it possibly will cost you mm-hmm. In the future. So I think if you go onto those websites, you should be able to access the training and mm-hmm. be a part.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that mental health can definitely correlate with acting out. So when students are, you know, causing a scene in class and they're, you know, acting like they need some attention, whatever the case is, just by being the class clown, that factors into mental healthness. So what other alternatives are there for disciplinary acts? So it's prevalent that Black students are being sent to the office or getting referrals or, you know, things like that, when it could just really be a mental illness or mm-hmm. illness, sorry, or, you know, something's going on at home and they're just, you know, causing a scene at school because it's their outlet, right. You know? And I am familiar with restorative justice, mm-hmm. and I know that that is definitely an outlet. So did you want to talk a little bit about that and what restorative justice is?
I'll address the question around, you know, the kids coming to school mm-hmm. and kind of acting out and the connection between mental health mm-hmm. And behavior. So I'll address that first. And I think, sometimes it's hard to separate and sometimes mm-hmm. you can't separate the two. They're so intertwined mm-hmm. Because the behavior oftentimes is a symptom as to what's going on with them.
Right.
And so it's hard to differentiate the two. So I think it's important if a student is, if you know that a student is struggling, and you know you are making a referral, or your referral is in terms of mental health services, or if you're just struggling, mm-hmm. I think it's just important for teachers or for anyone that's in the school system to really ask for help. Mm-hmm. The disciplinary rates, as you say, are disproportionately higher amongst the African American students or students of color. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, there's multiple reasons why the infractions that are listed on the referrals, and some of those are subjective, like, mm-hmm. you know, insubordination. That's a subjective kind of term because what things may look like to you in your cultural upbringing mm-hmm. is different than what this student's cultural upbringing is.
Right.
And just because a student raises their voice, does not make them insubordinate, doesn't make them, they're yelling at you. This is the means in which they communicate. So just getting an understanding of that, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And so anyway.
Yeah. And as far as restorative justice goes, yeah. you know, if, you know, not to say that every student that's acting out in class has a mental health issue. Like, that's not the case. Sometimes they're just, you know, the class clown and they like that title, you know?
Yes.
So, but it is also important that we keep our students in school, you know, and that we're not always suspending them and keeping them away from their education, because that then leads to other problems, you know? So there's a philosophy called restorative justice, which is a practice based on the idea of taking responsibility for actions that have hurt or harmed someone else and or yourself. So it really focuses on meaningful accountability, which includes active engagement and understanding what harms have been done and how to repair these harms. So in-school suspensions have worked in currently and in the past, where students are brought to another classroom, not suspended or sent to the office, but they have a representative in that classroom who talks with them. What's going on at home, if it is something personal? Mm-hmm. And usually it's like a two-day process where they can build a relationship with this person in order to gain that trust with them, in order to open up with the facilitator. Mm-hmm. And usually it's kind of like, this is what has happened, and how can we resolve it? How can we move forward? Versus, okay, referral, you're suspended for 2 days and it's still not be resolved.
Right.
You know, not be corrected for them when they come back. You know, we mm-hmm. won't have that problem anymore. Mm-hmm. So I really like restorative justice, and I know that a lot of schools are implementing it mm-hmm. into their systems. Mm-hmm. So have you had any experiences with restorative justice practices?
Yeah, I've had some experience with mm-hmm. restorative justice, and I think the biggest thing is that accountability factor mm-hmm. and really allowing that student to feel connected in some way to the school, or just connected to what they did, right? It's this level of kind of empathy building, mm-hmm. you know, so if you know you do something wrong to someone, taking that responsibility, really understanding what it is that you did, and allowing that person to talk about what happened to them mm-hmm. and how that affected them, you build some empathy, and then ability, then you then giving back to find out some way to restore, mm-hmm. as in restorative justice, mm-hmm. restore or repair that breach that happened when you committed that certain infraction, or that, when you hurt someone or
right.
Did something wrong.
Right, 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 right. So we've been speaking from a grade school perspective, but this affects or having representation even on a college campus.
Yeah.
And I know for myself, I went to an all white school K through 12 mm-hmm. growing up. And I really did long for that kind of cultural outlet where I can be around my people and learn more about my culture, because it wasn't being taught in my school. Mm-hmm. And when I lived in Los Angeles in elementary school, going into fifth grade in a white neighborhood, I was way behind, way, way behind academically. The school I went to in LA was nothing compared to the school I was in the predominantly white neighborhood. So I was just lacking in all areas. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated high school, I was just like, I'm ready to go to college. I want to go to a historically black college,
right.
You know?
Right.
But even I actually did not end up going to a historically black college. I went to Arizona State, and they had an outlet for every background. They had coalitions for Pacific Islanders, mm-hmm. Asian American, mm-hmm. Native American, mm-hmm. you name it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting involved with that definitely exposed me to a lot of opportunities, a lot of self-development and growth, making connections with business-minded people yeah. of the same background as me. Mm-hmm. And it was very necessary
yeah.
for me
yeah.
to grow as a person. And so I guess that was just another example of why we need that representation on any kind of mm-hmm. school base. Mm-hmm. And we do have the lines open for the next 10 minutes. If you would like to call in and share your story or why you feel like it's necessary to have representatives on campus, the phone number is 877-500-5266. So give us a call if you'd like to share your story or give any input. Deshaun, did you want to share any stories that you might have? Or we want to emphasize REAP and what REAP did for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think just having that, that caring adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's important. That's what kept me connected to school. That's mm-hmm. what kept me connected to my community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that is what's very important, to know that somebody cares, to know that someone understands, to know that someone has my back, mm-hmm. you know, if I need them, you know, and these are long-term relationships, mm-hmm. you know, I mm-hmm. still am in relationship with the founders and the directors of REAP, you know, right. and so it's, you know, I think it's important that these are long-lasting relationships. You keep them, they don't go anywhere. You're able to continue those relationships, and you can use them in your networking resources. I mm-hmm. mean, it's just, it's phenomenal what relationship does.
For sure. For sure. I definitely have kept some relationships from my college experience as well.
Yeah,
for sure. All right. I think we might have a call. Maybe, maybe not. no. Okay. So we're going to keep going. So, Deshaun, what advice would you give to parents when it comes to their involvement with their child's academic success?
I think as much as the parent can be involved, mm-hmm. You know, as a worker inside of the school systems, mm-hmm. You know, we've had parent nights. And I've been a part of parent nights mm-hmm. and a lot of parents, particularly, you know, parents of color aren't showing up. And I realize that, you know, once again, it's, you know, parents of color are working, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. you know, and so they don't have as much leisure as, you know, others who may be able to just come. But I think it's important that parents at all levels try to get involved as early as you possibly can. With your child's education and be interested in their education and what it is that they're doing, because it makes the world of difference.
For sure. It definitely made a world of difference in my situation. For those listening, I announced the wrong phone number to call in. So the phone number to call in to share your story, it's 503-231-8187. And again, we're asking for people to call in and talk about their experiences going to school and having representation from their cultural background. So give us a call. Yes, but parent involvement, very important. Showing interest in your students' success, because if parents don't care or don't show as much interest, then students aren't going to put as much effort into it.
Right.
And I've seen that, and it breaks my heart, because, you know, people at the school are like, hey, you can achieve this, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, my parents aren't doing anything, so right. I'm not going to be doing anything. You right. know what I mean? Like, they haven't set me up for success, so I'm probably just going to end up like them. And mm-hmm. these are their words.
Right.
And it just breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what can you do other than just convince them and give them the tools? Be like, I've been in this situation, or this person has been in this situation. You mm-hmm. know, you can overcome it. You can come out of it. Mm-hmm. And it's all about breaking that cycle,
yeah.
you know? So getting them to understand that is really important.
I think that speaks to just, you know, the idea of having other programs or partners mm-hmm. You know, within the school systems. And you know, and if I can encourage anything, I went to a training on trauma mm-hmm. and the facilitator, Robert Macy, I believe mm-hmm. that's his name, you know, brought up a really good point. He said that the school systems have now become the social services programs. And that really struck a chord with me, because the school shouldn't be the social. I mean, they should have some aspect, but they shouldn't be the social service program, right? Mm-hmm. Those things should be partnered with other programs exactly. outside, who can provide that wraparound, that coordination of services, that right. can provide the mental health care, that can provide the mentorship, right. as opposed to trying to do it all. And mm-hmm. you run yourself thin,
exactly.
you run programming thing, mm-hmm. you run the teachers are doing more than what they should be, other right. than just teaching, right?
Right.
They are
right.
becoming parents of these kids, pseudo parents, mentors, mm-hmm. They're becoming a social worker. They're mm-hmm. connecting kids to services. And that's a lot to ask for a teacher who's teaching 8 subjects in a day to 30 students
exactly.
because they're overcrowded. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I think it's important that the school understands the importance of building those partnerships with the community. It's mm-hmm. important.
It is. Make those connections, goals. Like, it'll make it a lot easier for you. All right, we have some calls coming in. Yay! All right. Hello? No? Maybe yes? All right. We're going to keep the conversation going. That's all right. but yes, partnership is important. I think one thing that conflicts with partnerships is creating the space for partners outside of school, you know, giving them an office space to connect with students and things like that. And that can be kind of stressful, you know, because we want partners to be on campus, but at the same time, it's like, we have a lot of students and we need to use all the class space for, mm-hmm. you know, teaching mm-hmm. or whatever the case is.
Right.
So I know that can be a setback.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an area that needs to be looked at, you know, mm-hmm. You know, if you're wanting the partners to be inside of the schools, I think there needs to be some level of, you know, how can we coordinate? How can we make this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Because we value your service.
Right.
We value what you bring. The students value it. And so we need to figure out a way to make sure that you have the space or the tools. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're speaking more
right.
so of, the tools to be successful here and give the kids, the students here, the services that they need.
Right, exactly. All right, can we try again with the calls? No? Call back. Okay, so we're gonna try and get these connections before the end of the show. The phone number to call in is 503-231-8187, and that's to call in, talk about your experiences in school, and we're gonna try and get someone before the end of our show. All right, so just to give you guys a summary, you are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. We are a feminist group that is on air every Friday from 6 to 7. So if you would like to be a part of KBOO or be a part of Bread and Roses, it is voluntary. And yeah, you should get in touch with our volunteer coordinator on kboo.fm/volunteer. All right. So, Deshaun, before we close out, did you want to talk about your business?
Yeah. So, my business is a RAP Counseling and Consulting, and it stands for Raising an Alternative Perspective. And it's me providing direct service, mm-hmm. Individual family counseling. My focus is working with pre-adolescents, 12 to 18, but I do also see adults up to 30.
Mm-hmm.
But I provide individual family counseling. I do culturally specific services for the youth that I see.
Yeah.
There's a lack of mental health consultants or mental health therapists, private mm-hmm. practitioners in the Portland area who are practicing providing culturally specific services. So, you know, the reason why I decided to step out and start my own private practice was because there's a need for counselors of color to provide the culturally specific services to our people, to our young people,
right.
And their families. And so anyway, I have my own private practice, and I really, really enjoy doing it. Really working with these families that come in. They are a pleasure for us to work with.
Awesome. And what is the name of your company?
So it's RAP Counseling, okay. Raising an Alternative Perspective. I can be found on rapcounseling.com. So that's RAAP counseling.com. And there's a contacts page. You can, if you're interested, I offer a 30-minute free consultation. I also accept multiple insurance companies for payment.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Deshaun.
Thank you.
We are going to close out the show and leave you with a song. But I would like to thank Deshaun again for joining us on Bread and Roses. And a big shout out to June for engineering our show tonight.
June.
I apologize for all the technical difficulties with the callers. If you guys tried to call in, sorry about that. Maybe next time we'll continue the conversation. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bread and Roses, again, airs every Friday at 6 p.m. Like us on Facebook and check us out on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. And I'll leave you with this last song. Good night.
I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country. I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it. I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope. When my back's against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest. Giant, I am an eagle, oh, I am a lion, down in the jungle. I am a marching band, I am the people, oh, I am a helping hand, I am a hero. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it. I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope. When my back's against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest.
In the ring of life.